Welcome to a Prevent Connect podcast, where we explore the prevention of violence against women. This is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault.
Hello, this is David Lee of Prevent Connect, and I am speaking today with Strong Oak LaFave. She is with the New England Learning Center for Women in Transition. How are you doing today, Strong Oak?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Great. I'm really glad to be able to talk to you today because we're going to be talking about the program. You're the sexual violence prevention educator at your organization, and you have a program that's called Visioning Bear Circle. Can you describe a little bit about what does bear mean?
Bear means balance, equality, and respect. An indigenous sexual violence prevention program totally based within the community. Many of our members have been trained in the 40-hour sexual assault training. All the work that we do is all based on consensus decision-making. We have some unique conflict resolution styles in terms of working with a lot of the harm that happens in our community that's really historically impacted by the whole reservation or the schools that were set up.
Describe the types of communities that Visioning Bear Circle takes place in.
We're an intertribal off-reservation community, so a lot of our work really happens around community gatherings, both in people's homes and also on an ongoing basis. Like, we have practically weekly intertribal powwows throughout the season, and then all winter long we have meetings in different settings. So it's like a community of people trying to really hold on to their culture in a part of the world where we don't have reservations, actually, in this area, where the Visioning Bear is, like in Franklin County and the whole Western Mass area. We have no actual reservation that is federal. The community, however, is really powerful and strong and is more regional, like people from all over New England come to our community gatherings.
As a sexual violence primary prevention program, what are the types of things you do to really work on creating those shifts in norms? And but you might frame it differently than calling it shifts in norms.
What we use is our sacred circle, which is using the whole circle approach with our talking stick for conflict resolution and for decision making. So we use the circle for everything. That's unique to indigenous peoples in terms of that, and it's really important, and we set all the goals within the community in that way, so we all have to agree on everything. Based on that, we identified a lot of problems in our area. We have more than our share of sex offenders in our area, and in fact, a lot of the folks weren't able to really attend powwows really safely. So what we did is we first tried to work within the existing intertribal community structure that was in the area, and we made some headway in there, but we ran into so much resistance that we ended up having to form our own powwow structure for our community gatherings, and we decided that we would use our core group for leadership around that and that we would build the safety using active bystander program. That's kind of unique. There isn't any other powwow around here or community gathering that have a prevention approach to dealing with teachings using something that you could actually measure to see changes. Because in the active bystander program, it's both kind of community-led in that the style that we chose, we collaborate with an agency in the area called Quabbin Mediation. And what we did was we have a program where it's an elder or adult and a young person, teen, teaching the community, and that kind of fits with our eldering and the way the model works in our community where people look to elders for leadership. So we have peers working to train other people around how to identify oppression, what to do if you see it. You know, we do a lot of active work around that. We tweak it to reflect our belief system, and we start really young because we start with our storytelling. Because storytelling is really big. We're people with an oral tradition, and we always teach the young ones about tradition through the storytelling. And like, so now we specifically put anti-violent, active bystander kind of stories real young and then go right through the whole generational cycle all the way into adulthood with different kinds of trainings we can do using that same model, and then we can evaluate it. And then we can measure it, and then we can develop leadership that way, too. And it's totally done by the community, which is really incredibly good.
It's so the community members actually develop and lead and do all of these activities?
Yes, they get trained, and then they get trained as trainers, and then they go out and train the community. We started out with training adults and adolescents, and then from there we expanded it out to include younger children and the toddlers too. And but we have a basic model that we use. And we work with Aquavan Mediation, which is not an indigenous program, but they have an excellent model for working in our community. And to address the same thing, we use another self-help model, the addiction trauma integration model that was developed by Dusty Miller and Laura Guidry. Again, that's like where people in the community can get trained to do the classes to address the substance abuse, the trauma, and to be able to develop like good coping strategies. And again, that's tools that you can use to evaluate the effectiveness and measure the change. But basically the exciting piece is we really want to have a safe community, and through colonization, there's been so much damage done within our community so that people don't trust like going to agencies necessarily, and no one ever came to the agency I work in before we started this program. I've been here, it took me 10 years to get this going, so I want to say it took a lot of work over a long period of time to get it established. But what really did it was when people began to own the process, and I think that's really key. They identified what we were experiencing. They decided how they wanted to proceed, and then we began to get incredible buy-in to the point where people were meeting twice a month from 10 to 4 on a Saturday, like totally committed to this. And that commitment is really what's driven this program. Like, we have about 300 hours of volunteer work being done every month through this program.
That's amazing.
And that's really pretty incredible. I am surprised and amazed myself, you know, because I've been doing this work for a long time, and I'm like, wow. And I think what did it was the consensus decision-making, the community-building efforts, the leadership development, the ownership by the community, and the agency leaving us alone to do our work. Like, we set all our goals, with our RPE work. We set all the goals in community, and we submit it, and the agency looks it over, you know, if people look it over, and, you know, everyone has just been thrilled, and the community feels like it's our program, we run it, and we get total support from Nelquit for doing that.
You know, what it sounds like is that what you've done is you found a way to bring together the strengths from your communities and from the Native American communities that you're working with, and use the systems and the language to be able to then take some of these concepts, and then what you've been able to do is then adapt that to be able to really help address issues that people in the community knew that they wanted to talk about.
That's exactly right. And you know, the other important thing I want to say is what made it really work, too, is there's been historically a lot of reasons to not trust the system. But when there were concrete needs, like with the Department of Children and Families around foster care issues or court issues, our group was right there to act as advocates and in a trustworthy way, so that we were able to actually do a lot of work within the systems to make them more culturally sensitive to working with Indigenous peoples. And that's been really wonderful. Like, we have a great relationship with the Department of Children and Families, and they've agreed to develop foster homes that are Indigenous foster homes and come and train our community, have a presence at our powwows. They've agreed to let us form circles of support around a family that is active with them, so that we as an Indigenous community can help the family really get the reunification much faster, and in some case prevent the break altogether. Like, if we provided enough services and were there for the family, then DCF did not have to remove the children.
What I'm hearing also is that what you're doing is a program that's what I would think of as a comprehensive prevention. You're doing primary prevention and secondary prevention and tertiary prevention in meeting the needs of the community, and that way you're really looking to make shifts and also address what comes up.
I think we were the only powwow in our state that was able to actually get through the police department a stay-away order so someone couldn't go to the powwow for the weekend because there were people there that wouldn't be safe if they came. And that was, like, kind of unheard of. And we got that response, like, within 24 hours from the police department for just that weekend. That was something that went right through the community. Like, people were really aware that we were able to do that. And I think that's partly why it's important to be associated with an agency that can make that happen.
Sounds like you've learned so many lessons over the last 10 years in this, and you've alluded to many of them. But for people who are trying to set up primary prevention of sexual violence programs in their communities, what's a lesson or two that's most important to keep in mind as they're proceeding?
That you know what the needs and strengths are of the community, and that it's community-driven, and that the ways of addressing the sexual violence and its prevention is, like, culturally based, determined by the folks that are in that community. We don't want to demonize people who do harm. We really want to do prevention work around real community safety, like for folks to be able to have a way to get help and remain in community. And I found that that's actually more healing for the whole community and allows for people to feel more safe, and for even people who are harmed to be able to feel that they didn't cause a rift in the community and that they're believed. It's comprehensive. Like, we more want to do the prevention work and prevent violence from happening in the first place through the active bystander work. And the other part is, when harm happens, we want to intervene early and have healing for everyone involved so that there's not a break, that everyone can stay in community if it's at all possible.
Thank you so much, Strong Oak, for sharing some of your lessons. And if you want to learn more about this program, I encourage you to go ahead to their website at www.nelcwlt.org/indigenous_voices.htm. And this link is also on the Prevent Connect website, and you can be able to learn more. So thank you so much, Strong Oak, for sharing the lessons learned. And I look forward to hearing more about how Visioning Bear Circle is going to be making changes in your community and preventing sexual violence.
Thank you for listening to this Prevent Connect podcast. Prevent Connect is a project of the California Coalition Against Sexual Assault, with funding from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The views presented on Prevent Connect are not necessarily the views of the United States government, the CDC, or CalCASA. To learn more about Prevent Connect, visit www.preventconnect.org. For more information about CalCASA's mission or to show your support, visit calcasa.org. That's CalCASA.org.